Leaders are all around us, at all times, and in every area of our lives. They motivate, they risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire, to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Dr. Roland Gertz, Chief Executive Officer of the Heart of Texas Community Health Center. Hosting the conversation is Jim Haller, retired bank executive and longtime leader in the Waco community. This conversation was recorded June 1st, 2016, in the KWBU studio.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Dr. Roland Gertz, Chief Executive Officer of the Heart of Texas Community Health Center. Roland, I know how busy you are, so thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Pleasure to be here, Jim.
Well, I'm going to start this off from a conversation I remember you and I had a few years ago when you were chairman of the Chamber of Commerce Board, and you were telling me about your country background, how you grew up. I think our listeners would love to hear how you grew up, where you grew up, how you evolved through school. Tell us.
I'll do that, Jim. I think about that an awful lot. I grew up on a farm about 50 miles southeast of Austin. 160 acres, quarter section is what they call that. We raised a little bit of everything, truck crops, few pigs, some cattle. It wasn't exactly a wealthy farm, but we never felt poor ever because we raised enough. We could always have fresh food on the table. My mother had a seventh grade education. My dad an eighth grade education. There were three kids. I was the youngest. The reason I think about it an awful lot is, my parents were never pushy about accomplishments, but all three of us were valedictorians of our high schools, and all three of us have done very interesting things, a couple of us in healthcare and one in engineering. So I think about how I was raised a lot and think about how my kids, how I tried to work with my own kids and my grandkids now.
Well, tell us how you evolved from that small town. Then you went on, obviously, to college, got your mm-hmm. doctorate. Tell us a little bit about how all that came about.
Sure. I had some good role models. My brother was 7 years older than I was, and my sister five. One of them went to A&M, one went to UT, and I decided I didn't want to be in the middle of that rivalry. So I decided to go to St. Edward's, a small school in Austin. Got a scholarship there didn't exactly start majoring in sciences, biology. I actually started majoring in journalism and something that you know something mm-hmm. about now. And I found that that was not quite my ilk at that time and changed to sciences. And I thought an awful lot about what I would do with my life, so to speak. And my grandmother, who lived with us till I was about 10 years old, had diabetes later in her life. She died at age 85. And I remember at the end of her life, she had a serious stroke. And there was not much you could do for strokes in 1964 and 65. And I always thought that if I could have the option, I would try to pursue a career that might help someone like her better. And I believe that's probably the earliest I can recall that I thought about getting into medicine.
Well, you obviously went to medical school. How did you – I know at one time you said you were a rural doctor. Mm-hmm. And that's how you started your family practice?
Right. My intention all along once I did well enough in college to get into medical school was to go home, take care of family members and friends. I had a couple of choices. I could have gone to Smithfield, Texas, where I went mm-hmm. to high school. Or Bastrop, Texas, which was a little closer, a little bit bigger, a little closer to Austin, a little bit bigger community. And when I finished training at first medical school in San Antonio and then residency training at Peter Smith in Fort Worth, I went to Bastrop. I chose Bastrop. I thought after looking at it that it would survive and be a thriving health community, a little closer to Austin, mm-hmm. a little more resources in the area. And I wasn't exactly correct. I went to Bastrop, and the small little hospital there, 26 beds, just really couldn't survive some changes in the way particularly Medicare paid hospitals mm-hmm. Around the time that I started. And it was closed about 18, almost 2 years after I returned to the area. So at that point, I had to look for some other things to do and got into the academic side of medicine, so to speak, teaching, and actually came to Waco for the first time in 1985.
And you came here in 1985, but you didn't stay.
No.
Tell us what happened after that.
I had a very dear friend of mine that had the same position that I have now in the early 80s, and he and I kept in touch with each other, particularly when I was practicing in Bastrop. And he had a position here that he needed some help with, and honestly, I needed a place to be mm-hmm. for a while to really decide whether I was going to stay in full-time practice, full-time, private practice, or change directions a bit. So he invited me up. He said, I don't ask for any guarantees, but I would like for you to stay a year and fulfill some of the requirements that he had for a grant that he had written and gotten funded. So I came up here and saw what the community was like, and also managed to go through what was offered in our program back then, a clinical fellowship in family medicine. And completed that, and because there was a pretty big shortage in the state and in the country for faculty members in family medicine, I found myself very shortly after that being invited to interview for the head of a residency training program in Corpus Christi, Texas. And as it turns out, we accepted that. Rose and I and the family, loaded up and moved to Corpus Christi after being here about a year and a few months.
Now, you mentioned your lovely wife, Rose, who we all admire, and she's done so much in our community
for putting up
also.
With me.
Well, good point. But tell us a little bit about how you met Rose. Tell us about your three wonderful daughters.
Sure. Will do, Jim. Thanks. We met when I was a sophomore in medical school. A dear friend of mine that I'd gone to college with, St. Edward's only had about 1,400 students in each class back then, and I decided that it'd be a whole lot easier for me, having had no one that had been in the medical profession in my family before, to maybe go to a medical school with someone I knew. So Bob Palmer and I headed off to San Antonio to medical school, and he and his wife and family, he had just separated from the services and bought a small house in an area of San Antonio called Leon Valley. And across the street lived my wife's sister.
Okay.
So one 4th of July weekend, I get invited to a picnic in the backyard at my friend's house. And my wife's sister had arranged for her to be there, too. And that's how we met.
Awesome. I love that story. That's a good one. Now, tell us about your three daughters and what they're doing.
They're, all three girls, and the first two were identical twins. One of them and her husband have moved back here. She's married to an ophthalmologist here in town, Patrick Harkins, and she is a lawyer, works part-time because now she has two children. Mm-hmm. They moved here from New Orleans where they met, and he liked the group that he found to work with here in Waco so much they moved. He was originally from Jackson, Mississippi, and they've been here now almost 5 years, and they've thoroughly enjoyed being here. The other twin, Adrian, lives in Fort Worth. She dabbles in a little bit of online graphic design work, and her husband's a lawyer with an investment firm up there. Mm-hmm. And they also have two children, a boy and a girl. Allison has a boy and a brand new girl mm-hmm. that was just born. And my youngest is 30, and Caitlin married her, I guess we would call, high school sweetheart. And they live here. They moved back here a couple years ago, and he works for his family's company, and she is a nurse and works part time at one of the hospitals here. And they have one child, a son.
So. Well, fantastic. It's always good to hear about families, and you're fortunate to have grandkids right here in Waco. Wish I did. Let's jump now to your huge responsibility at the Family Practice Center, as I have called it for years. And I know your title, of course, is over the Heart of Texas Community Health Center.
Right.
But tell us, I read recently, I believe you serve 58,000 residents of the county and area. Tell us just a little bit about, or a lot about it. I know we probably need more time.
I would wear out the entire time we have left. Yeah. 58,194 patients in 2015. We keep track of the number because we also operate and depend upon a lot of federal grant dollars to do what we do. We don't have a hospital district here. There's like the other nine big Texas counties that have hospital districts, which provide a taxing base, you know, that helps support indigent care. So we have to find a way to do that in a different way. So when I arrived here in 1997, the center was undergoing some pretty tough times. In fact, we were had about 5 days of operating reserves in the bank. So we had to find a way to either find new revenues or redesign ourselves or be a whole lot smaller than what we were at that time. And that would have put the family medicine training program at risk too, unfortunately, back then. So there was a model in the country called federally qualified health centers. I had experienced some of that during the time I was in Houston. I was in Houston for 6 years just before we moved here in 97. And had always thought about the center here fitting the model quite well. When I was here in the early 80s, there was a sliding fee discount schedule based on income, family size and income. We tried to provide basic primary care services back in the 80s when I was here. That's a requirement of federally qualified health centers. And so my protege at that time, the COO, CFO, Alan Patterson, and I sat down and decided that we were either going to have to do one of several different pathways, but something would have to change. So because the organizations that originally started the center, the County Medical Society and both hospitals, had an awful lot to do with the existence and survival of the place through the years since 1969, we gathered as many groups together and talked about the options we had. And they endorsed, and we went after applying for becoming a federally qualified health center. And the world became totally different after September of 1999 when we were approved. Mm-hmm. And the biggest difference is that in addition to grant dollars, you get other things that you can do to save money. You get, for example, we have a special pathway to get liability medical insurance. It was going to cost us the last year that we had commercial medical liability coverage over $2 million a year. That was in 1999. Now we get it for about $50,000 a year, but we have to do things like hospitals do. We have to do a lot of credentialing. We have to do all of the QA work that you'd normally expect in a large center. So that opened a whole new arena for us. And there is a lot of need in McLennan County for services by people who don't have an easy ability to obtain mm-hmm. them. There's an estimated 96,000 patients that live, or people that live in the county that are at 200% of poverty or less, and that's for a family of four, about 48,000 a year. So we grew substantially from 1999 forward. We grew because we had the option to get resources, put them together to meet the needs of the people that needed the services. Never, ever, ever, Jim, expected to get to 58,000 patients. That's almost 20% of the county. But that's where we are, 16 sites actually now, and 58,000 patients.
Well, for those of you who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Dr. Roland Gertz, Chief Executive Officer of the Heart of Texas Community Health Center. Roland, you mentioned 16 sites. Mm-hmm. How do you determine where those are going to be and what services they will provide?
Right. Well, the main site was there when I arrived, and it happens to be in a perfect location. It's at 18th and Colcord, mm-hmm. a little bit off of that corner. And it's in a neighborhood where a lot of our patients need us to be. What we did once we were determined to be a federally qualified health center, And we looked at what they call the target population, that group mm-hmm. that I mentioned that live at 200% of poverty or under. Technical skills and geomapping were advanced enough so that we could actually look at the county by zip code and see how many fit that target population lived in each of those zip codes. So about of the 16 sites, about 10 of the sites are intentionally located in areas that have a high concentration mm-hmm. of our target population. And that's good because a lot of the target population we care for don't have cars, it's hard for them to get, you know, to the physician's office if it's not in the neighborhood. And I do believe that is one of the reasons why we've had a lot of expansion and numbers increase also.
Well, with that many sites, how many staff members do you have now at the Family Practice Center?
Just short of 500, and they represent a full-time equivalent of about 474 people.
Goodness gracious. Yeah. And it's just mind-boggling to me that you have time to do this and you got all those people out at 16 different sites.
Well, I'm very fortunate in the sense that in the early 2000s, when it looked like this was going to happen in 2001, I had the fortune to be assisted in entering the executive MBA here at Baylor. And went through that, finished it in 2003, and I will say, without what I learned in that executive MBA, it would be more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Let's jump now to something that greatly helps our community, that's certainly part of the Family Health Center, is your 36 residents mm-hmm. that are in the final later stages of their training. Tell us, how do you pick those 36, and how long are they here?
They're here once they start for 3 years. Family medicine, internal medicine, pediatrics are 3 years in training after you get your medical degree, either DO or MD degree. And our program, just as a bit as a side, is a very old program. We've been here 47 years. We've operated for 47 years, almost as old as any family medicine residency training program in the country. We were one of the original 30 that got accredited, and that's quite a visionary thing to do back then mm-hmm. for the leaders of the community that did that. There is a formal process of matching that virtually all medical students participate in called the National Resident Matching Program, NRMP. They pay a certain amount per school they apply to. We pay a certain amount to get the information gathered that way. And then we interview lots of students. We interviewed this year over 110 students or so for 12 positions. We, as far as applications, though, we probably got over 600 applications this year from across the country. We've been very fortunate. Dr. Harden, who's the director of the program, and the faculty have managed to have the program ranked in U.S. News and World Report top 20 the last 2 years as far as family medicine training programs in the country.
Right here in Waco, Texas.
Right,
the top 20 in the country. Awesome.
Right here in Waco.
Well, for those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Jim Haller, talking today with Dr. Roland Gertz, Chief Executive Officer of the Heart of Texas Community Health Center. Roland, I remember, I can't recall exactly how long ago, but I know you've been in a medical career of 35 years or so. One of your greatest honors has got to be when you were elected national president of the 115,000 member American Academy of Family Physicians. That is unbelievable for a guy from Waco, Texas, but tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, it was an incredible experience, as you mm-hmm. said, and there are sometimes people who say I have this goal that I want to reach. I want to be president of a national organization. I didn't do that. What I said was I want to be the best I can be and help family medicine make its mark in how it helps people, how it cares for people. And I had a lot of help. I had a lot of people that helped me get to that point where I could actually run. Some organizations have a nominating committee for who selects, you know, whoever mm-hmm. is president-elect. The American Academy of Family Physicians, ever since creation back in the 30s, or actually the late 40s, has a true nomination and election process where you stand up in front of all the delegates, and there's 200-some of them, And you give 7-minute speeches, and they grill you with questions and wow. that you have to answer. And then they vote. Unfortunately, I won the vote and served in a very interesting time. 2010 and 2011 was just after the ACA or mm-hmm. Obamacare was passed. And it was a lot of political turmoil even within all ranks on that regard. So it was walking down the fence of making sure that we had a system that tried to provide care and also walking down the fence of making it most efficient. Family docs have always been on the front line. And so for 20 years, they've been in favor of expanding insurance coverage for docs because without it, they know what happens.
Well, we all know here in Waco what a great leader you are, serving in that capacity as the president of 115,000 doctors. It's just, well, let me go to this. You did that, and yet you have taken the time since then to become chairman of the board of the Greater Waco Chamber of Commerce, president of the Waco Business League. But before we even visit those two time-consuming honors, tell us about Prosper Waco. I know you are one of the originators of that. You were, many people refer to you as the founding father. We know we've got a poverty issue in Waco, but tell us how that evolved and what your role was and what you see as the progress so far.
I think if people are giving me that credit, I'm flattered. I would have to give credit to Virginia Dupuy. She has been an incredible mentor for me and asked me my interest in being involved in Prosper Waco. And there are a number of reasons why it fit what I was looking for. I'd finished the chamber work. I was coming to the end of the Waco Business League positions. And all through my life, I have believed that education was absolutely the way to change a person's life if they understood the importance of it to them or they found the right educational path to go down. So when Prosper Waco came along and the concept of the collective impact, where you look at what's already working and you try and make that the best it can be, and the decision was made by the board to incorporate financial stability or things to address poverty, education, and healthcare, it was perfect. It was a perfect fit for what I'd been thinking about my entire career, about how you brought all those pieces together. And it made a whole lot of sense to me that you needed data. You needed someone objective, more outside of the organization, to look at the information and to evaluate the process. And if you can make things already happening be even better for the community, it seemed like the right thing to do. And so it just fit. It was like a great fit for me and what I was looking to try and do, particularly after doing all those other things that you mentioned, Jim.
And what would be the time frame? How long will Prosper Waco continue to benefit our community and what they find and the results of it?
I think the way, you know, communities work and the way society works to a certain degree is an element of Prosper Waco will likely need to be around forever. Because things, you know, go up, they go down. Things mm-hmm. change. Now, that it's unlikely that they'll ever, hopefully, they'll ever have to work on all three at the same time as they're sort of doing now. I think that they may change a little bit about what they work on. If you have accomplishments in the education area, the goals that they're after, they may focus more on the healthcare areas mm-hmm. for the next phase, or they may focus more on the financial stability. Financial stability is arguably the hardest one and will probably take the longest. So how long it'll be there? As long as there's problems to deal with.
Well, thank you for helping get that started, and certainly it's a hot-button topic in Waco now and the good work that they're doing. Let's jump over to your role as chairman of the board of the Waco Chamber of Commerce. We know the primary endeavor of Chamber of Commerce is economic development. In your year in that role, what did you find that was most appealing or surprising about our efforts to get new companies to come to our community?
That's an area, although, you know, I went back and got the MBA in 2003. Mm-hmm. You know, I had sort of the, I guess what you would call the book learning background. But there's nothing that replaces, you know, truly being in a position where you're in the midst of an organization, whether it's ours or one other or a different one, and then sharing that information with each other. I learned tremendous amounts about different industries. I sort of knew how the bookkeeping went, mm-hmm. you know, the other kinds of economic stuff. But I, the biggest thing that I learned was how caring the business community in Waco is, how a lot of them struggle because that's just the way the markets are, and how much the chamber itself can really make a difference if you put if you package and put the community together in the right way, because all of these other companies that they're trying to attract have someone else that's trying to bring them there too, and believe me, they're putting their best foot forward. So the better the chamber can operate that way, bring in more businesses, have more caring people for the community, the better it's going to be.
Well, you've done all these terrific things on the medical side, the community benefit side, the chamber business side. How, and you've been successful in all of that. How would you describe your leadership style?
That's a question I've gotten asked several times when I did interviews way before I came here, because I've been here now 19 mm-hmm. years, and I don't believe I'm going to go anywhere anytime
soon.
Good. I would say that it's almost collective, like Prosper Waco is. Do I have my opinions? Yes. But I think the leader has to sit back and let those around them become leaders also. And what you do is try and keep them out of the big holes that get in the way, or suggest things to them. And then comes a tough issue sometimes. There's been a lot written about what makes a great leader, and a leader just a so-so leader. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an unknown sort of intangible thing, whether one calls that intuition or whatever, because there's some really big, awful problems that have more than one solution, that no more than one possible solution, and there's no way to know which one's the right way. So you take your experience, you take your sort of thoughts and feelings about the issues you're working with and what's involved with it, and sometimes the biggest thing the leader does is make the choice when those around you can't. And fortunately, most of those have worked out okay. I've had plenty of things that didn't work out. You don't hear about those as much.
I know the feeling. Let me ask you one question before we finish up today. A person in your position has got to be under great amounts of stress, and I know how intense you are. What do you do to relax and just de-stress yourself?
Five grandkids.
Great answer. I love it. I love it.
Family. I love to garden a little bit. I love to be outside. I still think about being on the farm, and so I'll escape every once in a while, to, either to a place in the hill country that we have friends that live in that area, or I haven't been down to the farm much, but family is really the main way.
Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but Roland, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you so much for all you've done, not only for the medical community, but for the greater Waco area. And thank you for being with us here today on KWBU.
Thank you, Jim.
This conversation was recorded June 1st, 2016, in the KWBU studio.